Good afternoon. This is TT Sternenzi, and you are listening to Critical Reflections. This is season two of the podcast. And as always, people are probably tired of hearing me say this, but I am always excited to have the opportunity to talk with people, do some vibing, communicating, find out what they're doing, what they're interested in. It's always kind of film based for me. So there are going to be film angles, and there are going to be even more film angles in this particular conversation that we're going to have today. And I cannot wait any longer for this. So here we are. Today's guest is David Chumasuro. He is a local filmmaker here in Cincinnati. But before I try to do anything else with him, I'm going to allow David the opportunity to introduce himself before we really dive into this crazy conversation. So David, take it away.
Absolutely. TT, thank you so much for having me, man. I'm David Chumasuro. I am a Cincinnati-based filmmaker and comedian and photographer. I was born in the great nation of Zimbabwe, moved to the United States in 2006, and I've just lived in Cincinnati in different parts of this crazy, weird little town, and just have gotten to absorb a whole lot of life and make stuff with some really, really cool people in my time here. So yeah, I'm really, really excited to just get to talk to you about like my love for film, the short film I just made and we got to see, and yeah, just kind of like reflect and get to know you a little bit more as well. Just like, how did we end up here as people who just love stories and film and now get to just talk to each other?
Yes, and I definitely love that. This is one of those exciting things too, because, you know, I have, as part of this podcast, I've been able to talk to people, again, primarily that are regionally based, but I have there are a few episodes where I've talked to people, friends of mine who are in different parts of the country, people that I've worked with along the way. But yeah, when I'm talking to people here, I'm usually talking to people that I know and that I know pretty well. So those conversations are always kind of different because there's some of that inside information that we share with each other.
We're two strangers just getting to like for real have a conversation for the first time, and we speak a common language of film, but we know nothing of each other, which is kind of exciting. It's like a blind date of sorts.
Right, that's totally it. So like I said, I'm really excited about this, and I need to make sure that as part of this conversation, as we get started, I need to name check Johnny Shank. Yes, over at the Woodward now. Johnny is the person, and I worked with Johnny when he was at the Esquire. And as a matter of fact, for this year's Over the Rhine International Film Festival, I was able to hook him up with the Woodward, which is where he now works, handling film programming over at the Woodward. Johnny's a great guy. We've been communicating literally since the festival, talking about film and film projects and programs going on here in the city. And he is the connecting kind of bridge between the two of us here. He brought us together. We got together, sat down, had a drink and talked. And I was just like, oh my God, you were now part of this world. So yeah, I want to just jump right in. Like, again, you've mentioned your love for film. So I guess this is a two-part question really to kick things off. Like, where did that love for film start for you? And then once you got here, how did you find your place within sort of the Cincinnati film world?
So kind of looking back on it, I think like the love for film has always been kind of there ever since I was a kid. There's definitely been like some mile markers where important events happened that kind of steered me towards this being kind of like a thing. But I remember as a kid, like just loving even the first Spider-Man movie with Tobey Maguire. And I would go home every day after school and I would watch it over and over again to the point where I'd like memorize the dialogue, and it drove my family absolutely nuts. But like my dad always just had like a bunch of DVDs and movies, and we would just watch movies together. So that was kind of like a thing. And then when my family moved to the United States in around like 2006, but in 2007, I remember watching The Pursuit of Happiness. And I remember as I was watching that movie, I remember just being like, man, this is it. I want to be a stockbroker. And
that's like, not what I expected, by the way. You went somewhere else with that.
I watched Pursuit of Happiness and I was like, yes, the stockbroker is it. And I just kept talking about wanting to be a stockbroker because I watched this film. And then a family friend by the name of Tom Kadenkamp, I came over, and there was this film camp that was starting. And he was just talking to my parents, and he was like, I feel like this is something that was meant for David to go to. And then I remember, like, as a freshman in high school, walking into this camp that was being run and just being, it was such an immediate, like, thing of just, like, this is immediately it. I, like, knew from that point, like, this is exactly what I want to do. And everything mm-hmm. just kind of made sense of just, like, how much I always loved movies as a kid. And I would just, like, I remember, like, even, like, at the age of, like, 9 being like, I understand The Matrix. And I'm like, why is it not? First off, why is a 9-year-old watching The Matrix? And I'm like, I just loved all of it. So it was just this thing where after like going to the film camp, being around some production, but didn't really make stuff throughout like my adolescence and some early college years, but around college and after dropping out of college and I was working at the Apple store, I remember just kind of hitting a point where I was like, I always said I wanted to be a film director, and I was like, let me just start doing it. I made a 1-minute little, and I'd always write all the time. I love writing. So I made this 1-minute short film with my friends, just called them up and said, hey, I have this idea. Do you guys mind just like, I'll buy you some coffee, just helping me do this thing. They showed up, and then people seemed to like it. And I was like, all right, cool. And then just kept making like smaller and smaller, like just small things, but bigger and bigger. And then just really kind of, over the years, got to work in some environments where I got to actually learn the process of filmmaking and the process of even just like video production with still the goal in mind of like, I want to be a filmmaker, and meeting guys like Daniel Mulvaney, Noah Vanilia, who were my collaborators on our Baby Knows, like just over time, meeting some really cool people who were like, oh yeah, we all really want to do this. So let's just do it. And that's kind of like the roundabout way of how I landed here.
Okay. All right. So, and I'm glad you mentioned this because you dove right into Our Baby Knows, which is your short film. And again, that's how I heard about you, because, you know, you and Johnny were talking about the idea that you had had the opportunity to screen the film, I believe, at the Woodward. Yeah. So, yeah, I literally, and I held off. You sent me this link, you know, probably about a week or two ago. And I was like, you know what? I want to wait. I want to save it because I really want to have like my first reaction to it be while we're having this conversation. And I did that. I literally just watched your short probably 10 minutes before we got on our call. Here.
This is raw and as fresh as possible. I'm excited.
Yeah, it is. It is a very raw, very exciting kind of experience. And before I get into it, I would love for you, if you could, to just give a really quick kind of synopsis of the story and what you're aiming for.
Yeah. So the story of Our Baby Knows, without all the way giving it too far away, because I do like actually keeping that element of surprise as far as like some of the subject matter is, it's a young Black father having to explain a harsh reality to his son for the first time, but uses moments of triumph to soften the blow for his son as well as himself. So that's kind of just the very brief log line of the film of just like, it's based around this intimate father-son relationship as well as like, and just kind of like how to bring healing to a very, very tough topic.
Right, right. Okay, so that's great. And I wanna make sure that I respect the idea of not giving too much away, but I would have to say that for me,
please,
that first reaction that I had as I was watching it, you hit obviously all those high points in your synopsis, just the idea of having a conversation, a very difficult conversation with your child. But
you just say it is a conversation about race.
It is.
This point is a conversation about race, about the conversation of what race in America looks like.
Right. But it's interesting to me because as I was watching this conversation and as it unfolds, what happened for me is you start to recognize that it is really maybe the first of potentially several conversations that this father and son are going to have over the course of this child's, you know, early childhood into adolescence, and then potentially even into adulthood. And the fascinating thing for me, you know, Black people here in this country, we always talk about the idea that as parents, we have to have the conversation with our kids. But usually the conversation is, well, we have to be able to talk to our kids about how they handle themselves with the police. So, and yes, that is one very, very important conversation, but your film actually shows that there are conversations that have to happen before that one. Mm-hmm. And again, I think on my end, as I was watching your film, I was kind of like, man, you could actually be developing a series where, like I said, you look at, you know, this whole spectrum of conversations that kind of have to take place and don't always take place between fathers and sons or parents and children in general, however it plays out. But like I said, your film is kind of like the first conversation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you conceive and kind of set up that dynamic? Because again, you're right. I love that you have them talking and the father's telling stories, but it intersperses this idea of there should be stories of triumph and mm-hmm. that kind of soften that blow a little bit. So how did you kind of configure the notion of how that conversation was going to play out?
Yeah. So the story of how this was written, as crazy as it may sound. So I wrote, it's only happened two times in my life where I call these downloads, where I see an entire story from like beginning to end. And as someone that likes to write a lot, whenever I feel, when I felt the idea for the first time, I had been in a rhythm of just writing constantly whenever I feel something, and then just kind of prolifically writing short films. So I actually kind of wrote this in a one night state of flow. This is kind of like, so minus a couple of tweaks later and there, this is for the most part, what ends up on the screen is like the first draft for the most part of what I wrote down, which is still kind of like wild that experience happened. But the back end of that was, I was working as a creative director for a particularly large organization, and we were talking about race very, very constantly. And as I noticed that, what happened was, I noticed that when people have the conversation about race, there's primarily two audiences of just like, there is a white audience and or a black audience, particularly if we're in Cincinnati, where we have a demographic mix that's so 50-50. Mm-hmm. And usually when the conversation happens in that way, it is tailored, not in a terrible way of just like tailored towards a white audience, but usually the sensibilities of black people are left out of these conversations, particularly around the idea of trauma. So as I was writing, just the feeling of, if I were to be delivered this news for the very first time right now, how would I want it to be delivered to me? And it's just the thing of just like making it so, I think one of the things that I lamented over 2020 was just it became, and this is a longer conversation that can be had, of just like how profitable it is to see black people in pain. And I was like, I want to have the conversation, but I want to remove as much pain of the from it, because again, I'm trying to, and this has to be delivered to a way, to a child in a way where it's like, they still feel like their humanity is intact. It's not like I'm even just like, remember as a child, like having this conversation or as our versions of it, feeling like, no, is there something wrong with me? And it's like, no, there's something wrong with the society you live in. You, as you are, as beautiful as you are, just happen to exist in this thing. So that was kind of like the interplay and things that make me feel like a kid. I love The Rock. I love basketball. I love these things that make people feel just larger than life. So those, as I was kind of just writing and typing away, it was literally just the first two things I thought of were like, the Cavaliers and The Rock, and LeBron James and all that. So it just kind of went into this crazy flow state night where this thing happened to just fall into my lap, and I felt like I had to be a good steward of that story and tell it as well as possible, because it's a conversation that's, I mean, as a black man, is important to me. And also, from what's been cool to see is just how much it means to everybody else. That, to me, that was the measure of like, did we do the job well? Of like, does this mean as much to everyone as it means to me? And I think it does.
Okay. Yeah. I would definitely agree with you that it does have that meaning. And, you know, again, this idea that I didn't necessarily know you that well leads into this next question that I have, because you mentioned coming here to the States in 2006. So how old were you at the time that your family moved here?
I was 12 years old when my family moved here. My family had lived in Cincinnati in 2002 to 2003. I was about 7 years old. Mm-hmm. And so we lived here for about a year, and then we went back home, and then we moved back in like 06. And that was kind of like the permanent move.
Okay. All right. So yeah. And this is fascinating to me because this is leading into kind of another kind of sideline area, if you will, for me as a critic, because having just gone through and finished up the Truth and Reconciliation Project grant that I was working on, I kind of came to recognize, and again, this is an interesting thing for me. It opened up a whole new journey for me as a critic, because I recognized my awareness of Black film is completely Western based. Yeah. I am a critic here in the States. I'm born and raised here, never lived anywhere else. So yeah, my conception of Black storytelling is the studio system and the independent system here in the States, which means I don't know as much as I would like to know about not just Black cinema, but again, the idea of Black culture in other parts of the world. So having you here at this moment talking about your film and knowing that your film is actually very, very specific to the United States, I'm curious, based on your experiences, what was it like for you coming to this country and kind of being immersed in what we deal with race and racism and representation and all these issues here?
Yeah, it's a jarring experience, to say the least, because specifically with where I'm from, I'm part of a very select window in Zimbabwe known as the Born Free Generation, which was between 1980 to 1995, 96, where it was post-colonialism, pre-Mugabe dictatorship, where there was just kind of like this energy in Zimbabwe where kids were just taught, like, you can be anything. The next president is in this room, the next titan of industry, all this belief, all this like crazy stuff. Like, just like, you can literally go to the moon if you want to. That's how we were brought up and raised. And I just, it was just like a thing of just like, okay, yeah, I can do anything that I want to if I set my mind to it. That's not cool. And then I moved here, and I saw that was, and then just learning gradually that is not the case. That was the jarring experience for me of just like, oh wait, like the rules are a little different around here. I don't know exactly what it is, but how we operate around here is very, very different. Where for people that look like us and people that look like me, we're not given the same messaging of just like, you can go anywhere, you can be anything, you can do anything. Sky's the limit if you want to be a film director or an astronaut or whatever. That messaging excludes us in a way. And as I moved here and as in the process of becoming older and actually learning what it was and how this thing manifested itself and was established and how it's played out over the years, of just like, it was just genuinely confusing at first of just like, wait, why do people talk to me a certain way? Why do people take it a certain way when I say I want to be able to do that? Or it's like, or even at points just being frustrated of just being like, why is it such a big deal if I decided I wanted to try something new? And it's because the messaging around here is like, hey, you have three options. Cool. And that's always been frustrating, to say the least, for me. And also frustrating of just like, oh my gosh, we can be so much more if we were given the tools and the resources just to be ourselves, of just like, if the same messaging that is applied to the majority were applied to us, look at all the amazing things that we could do if you just gave us a shot. Right. And that's that. Yeah. So without rambling on too much, that was probably like the experience of just like, oh, constantly learning, just like, oh, this thing goes really, really deep as far as like, and also knowing that I am representative of something different, like, and I mean, there's always like, with anything that's different, sometimes it can be met with like an adverse reaction or people are afraid of it. But it's like, no, we're all good here. I come from a different place where, with its flaws, I know that with all of its flaws, I still know that there's this a deep identity that was rooted in me that could never be shaken by.
Okay.
The reality and the quote unquote reality of this place that I live in right now.
Right. Man. So yeah, this is, again, this is one of those, that's the fascinating part of this conversation. Cause like I said, yeah, obviously I'm a little older than you and it's interesting to see and to think about like my experiences here in this country, because in what you said, I also hear a lot of this idea that, you know, there was a moment, obviously, you know, 08, if you will, you know, a couple of years after you got here, where for the first time, I got the sense that there was going to be a generation that was going to come up, you know, around that phase and definitely after, that they would be able to look at this country and potentially think, wow, I could do anything, or I could be anything.
Yeah.
You know, and it was one of those things that prior to that, and again, I'm again from a generation prior to that, like the idea of Barack Obama being president of the United States, I can remember sitting at my house in my house with my wife and two of my friends that night, election night, and sitting there thinking, like, you know what? I didn't believe it was going to happen. It was like, okay, I voted for the dude, but I'm like, I didn't think he was going to win. And then all of a sudden they're announcing that he won. And I'm still kind of like, ooh, is this really happening right now?
Yeah.
Because I had spent my entire life assuming that it was never going to happen in my lifetime. It's not just, it's weird, because it wasn't to say that I thought that it would never happen, period. But because it hadn't happened for hundreds of years before I got here, it was just kind of like, well, it'll happen somewhere down the road after I'm been gone. And yeah, my kids or my grandkids or my great grandkids, whatever, it'll be their experience to see. But all of a sudden I was in that moment and it was just like, okay, this is here. It feels good for me, again, thinking about not myself, but those generations to come, because that expected thing had happened sooner than we anticipated. So it was like, okay, but it does. It led to this kind of subtle shift in things. And yet we still live in a country and we've just dealt with things in the last couple of years that are reminders that, you know what, we're still not, we're not really where we want to be or where we thought we
not
were.
Close.
So that, it's a weird, this is just a weird place.
It's so weird, dude. Yeah. It's like, because I've had friends, especially like in last year, with my specific perspective being kind of like a third culture kid, I think what that's allowed me to do is be able to like analyze kind of like the situation, not necessarily in an objective manner, but in a manner that allows me enough distance from both people groups, but I can say, I can like have a specific perspective. So people will constantly ask me my perspective, and it's like, it's out here, it's, people still think of the thing of just like, it's in your face. And I was like, no, it's in like the water, dude. It's like in the air of just like, you walk into a place and eye contact isn't held as long as other people. And people don't shake your hand the same way. I'm just like, tiny little things where it's like, if you're like, oh, that's the thing, it seems out of the norm. But if you put all of these tiny little things together, it's like, oh yeah, this is the difference between how some people have to navigate life. And this is the difference that some people have to navigate life. And then just putting those things into words putting those people's, those things into words and scenarios that people can then see for themselves. It's just like, oh, I had never noticed that before. But I think there's like a thing that happens, like, especially with how the conversation went last year and why so the backlash is happening, is like, people saw it for the first time and they are trying really hard to unsee it. That's why even saying the words like critical race theory, people go crazy, because they saw something last year that they're like, no, this cannot be the reality that I live in. So people are, just like with anything that's traumatic, is like, people just try to repress it. So people are trying, I'd say it was like a weird thing of last year, everybody went through a collective trauma, and then there was a collective trauma about race as well. And because we're not new to this conversation, we know how to, like, it's like, hey, this is like a thing. But for a lot of people, this is the first time they ever realize
right.
this is a thing. And they're trying to shut their eyes off as much as possible. And it's like, no, if we actually talk about it, that's and actually like say this is what the thing is, we can actually get to a point where this doesn't have to be a thing anymore.
Right.
And, yeah.
Right. And, you know, the other part of this, and again, this is going to steer us back into the filmmaking aspect of this, which I find kind of intriguing as well, because we have had issues over the last maybe 3 to 5 years over the idea of having Black people from outside the United States mm-hmm. looking at and telling our stories. And I remember, yeah. for instance, you know, Steve McQueen, 12 Years a Slave, you know, mm-hmm. the idea of having David Oyelowo come in and play Martin Luther King and the outrage that people within the community here had, because they're kind of like, well, wait a minute, mm-hmm. are you saying that there aren't Black performers here in the States who could be yeah. taking on these roles, or Black filmmakers and storytellers who could be telling these stories? But, you know, and your film is another piece of this too. Mm-hmm. It is far more eye-opening for me to be able to see someone else from mm-hmm. outside, you know, outside my perspective and outside the typical American perspective, to be able to look at our situations mm-hmm. and our stories and be able to comment on them. I think mm-hmm. that's a forgotten but very necessary piece yeah. of this process that, yeah, I feel like now I need more films from you, because I'm kind of like, yeah, you're seeing something a little differently than I would, or that mm-hmm. someone else who's living here and whose only experience is this experience.
Yeah. I think I think for me, entering into the conversation and even just like having seen, and also, I mean, I'm a fan of like Steve McQueen, and I mean, dude's insanely good. I mean, Widows, it's like one of the things where I watch these conversations, and I think part of what happens is, even within the Black community, why there is an adverse reaction is because sometimes in the storytelling, there isn't a fondness for Black people mm-hmm. that is made very apparent. And for me, it was like, as and even in the creation process and doing cast reads and like giving feedback to my actors, was like, I want this to be a love letter to Black people, because I love Black people so much. I love American Black culture. I'm a giant fan of it, and I can't all the way act like I'm 100% African American, because I'm not. I'm a Zimbabwean living in America. So there right. is, I can never appropriate a culture that isn't all the way mine. But also at the same time, I still live in the reality of being a Black dude in America, where yeah. I've had some traumatic interactions with police, and they didn't like, are you African or are you Black? It's like, no, I was just immediately the same thing as everybody else. Mm-hmm. So there, I had to draw on my own experiences in this place to be able to come into the story empathetically, and also just being able, not being like, and here's how Black people should react to race so that it doesn't happen anymore. It's like, no, I wasn't trying to do that. Just like, right. I was just trying to tell a story of like, this is a thing that happens to us, but also, you can never negate the beauty of our people, the ingenuity of our people, mm-hmm. the creativity of our people. And that was the thing that I wanted more than anything else, to showcase that, like, no matter what this place tries to do to us, we are still something insanely beautiful. And as I'm in the writing process of like what I want to create after this, it's, I want it to be an appreciation of, I want it to be a visual representation of our beauty, and in something that's more of a long form format.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm just I've been in a space of just like, for a very long time, wanting to see other parts of ourselves explored on screen outside of the trauma. And right. that's, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, yeah, it is. It's a vital piece that, again, I feel like it is sometimes difficult for us who have been here, and this is our only experience, mm-hmm. to find ways to make sure that we're able to even thread that needle ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mentioned earlier that I'm kind of on this new kind of journey of discovery, if you will. Mm-hmm. literally just in the last year, for instance, I mentioned Steve McQueen earlier with 12 Years a Slave, but I am just as intrigued by what he created last year with Small Axe, that series that he made for Amazon Prime, which was looking at the Black British experience, because all of a sudden I remember watching those episodes. And for instance, the first one, Mangrove, that dealt with the Black Panther movement in Britain. And I was kind of like, in my head, I'm like, I didn't even know that there was a Black Panther movement in Britain.
Yeah.
Like, how do I, as a Black person in the world, not know that there were Panther movements? And now, as a matter of fact, it's one of those things. I literally just year at the Toronto International Film Festival, which I attended virtually this year. There was a series, I believe, from New Zealand called The Panthers, which looked at, you know, the development of a Panther Party group in the 70s in New Zealand.
Wow.
And I'm kind of like, whoa, like, why? Like, again, it's like, well, why didn't I know this? But it's like, now these stories are out there. So it's like, I feel like it's my responsibility to go out and find those stories and find those connections, because it's letting us know that we exist, again, throughout the world, and our experiences in those other places may not necessarily always be that different than our experiences here, but we don't know that. You're kind of living in isolation.
Exactly. Oh, it's it lives in isolation, but the beauty is, I'm a giant fan of music, and why I love music is because we've never seen it on screen, but we've seen it happen in music, because music is, I believe, just a way of archiving our history. And because of the intersections that happen, you start to see that, like, oh, even in the music, this idea of like a global Black identity does exist. And we exchange it with each other within the music. We've never seen it on the screen, but that's why your Jay-Z's are inspired by your Bob Marley's, and your Bob Marley's are inspired. Oh. You know what I mean? It's because all these guys and all these women are just like communicating with each other all the time through the song. Right. And what I'm excited to see, and what that does is it makes us go back to the thing of just like, oh, we have different cultural settings, but there's something about us that still translates to each other no matter where on the globe we're placed, and being able to put that on a screen for people to be able to really see what it looks like for just Black people to exist in a bunch of different places. Like one of the more eye-opening experiences that I had in my life was about 3 years ago. My best friend Rachel, she's a Black woman, lived from Cincinnati. She had moved to Madrid just because she was like, I need to get out of America. I'm gonna go to Madrid. And I visited her and then watched her and her friends. And I've actually started writing something about it. It was like three, four Black women living, American Black women living on a society outside of America. And it was fascinating to watch. It was just like, you're like this over here. You're like this over here. It's just like, there was like a freedom to it. It was just like a fascinating thing to watch. And just like, and it's, again, part of the thing of just like thinking about like, what does it look like, again, to have our beauty displayed in all aspects, right, in different settings? And that's kind of like the hope that I don't want to make diverse movies. I don't want to make, like, I want movies that just like, because sometimes those things feel like I'm placating, or they're kind of like virtual signaling. It's like, I just want to explore different beauty. I want to explore people's beauty without having to attach a specific buzzword or whatever, like, and just say, hey, this person is beautiful as is, period.
Boom. Right.
Here you go.
Yeah. It's so funny, though. I feel like you're bringing up music was like the perfect way to kind of encapsulate that, because music allows us to do that without a lot of these barriers that kind of come into play. Because as soon as you mentioned music, the first thing that popped up in my head was like Jazzmatazz back in the day with Guru. And MC Solar from Paris. Yeah. And I was at that song, all of a sudden, I'm like, yeah, that's it. Because I would listen to MC Solar. I don't speak French at all. Mm-hmm. But you got the flow and the understanding of what he was trying to get across as he and Guru are they're exchanging lines. And it's just like, that's it. And that's exactly what I'm talking about. And that's what film hasn't quite been able to figure out just yet. I think, and again, I keep saying you, but I'm like, I need more filmmakers, you know, who are willing to kind of open that idea up and say, well, wait a minute. Yeah, here's my perspective on this. What else can I kind of pull into that? Like, to be quite honest, hearing you talk about your friend in Madrid, I'm like, okay, you definitely need to tell that story.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It was 10,000, but I already have like their permission and everything.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like, you need to go to Madrid. You need to spend time there, soak that up and bring that story back to us. Because again, it's in kind of translating all of the pieces of that story. You're bringing a separate piece to it. Your friend who's from here, but who's living there now, she and her crew are bringing something different to it. And then it's this idea of Black people in Madrid. So it's like, okay, you throw all of that together. We don't see that on a regular basis, and we don't feel it as a very natural way of moving through the world. And yet we need to.
Yeah, we need to. It was, I feel very fortunate that I've gotten to, I've actually seen more of the world than I've seen of the United States. So I've gotten to travel I've gotten to travel quite a bit. And even just seeing like, because of my tone of voice or whatever, people sometimes assume that I'm an American. And then every now and then people will be like, oh, he's an African. So just kind of seeing like being able to just navigate this different places with an identity, like kind of just like even just being kind of like a chameleon of like, right. I don't have to fully disclose all of who I am to you because I want to see how you treat or react or just your perception of what it is without knowing that there's a deeper layer. And what that allows me to do is just be able to like seek the nuances and stuff. And that's a whole lot. That's why I love just being around people is because people have so much nuance to them. Where I've learned that people are rarely just one thing. And I'm excited for a time in filmmaking where we as a people get to be shown as more than just a one thing. We get to be shown as multiple things. And for me as a filmmaker, like one of the things that we talked about the first time is I'm really big into the idea of legacy of just like, I can't tell every single story in the world. But so what is it? It would be selfish for me to just be like, try and do everything. I was like, no, hand over people and tools to people so that they can do the thing too. Because I'm still at the end of the day, a giant film fan. I don't want every movie to be made by me. I want to watch stuff that I don't even know anything about. Right. But I'm like, this could be cool. And it comes from someone that looks like me that has a similar background from me. And I'm now getting to see their take on the world. So that's the stuff that's really, really exciting to me about what hope, like the things that we can usher in and the generation that we can usher in from an artistic standpoint of, oh, there's an entire people group whose good lives barely get shown.
Wow. Well, you know what? You, in this conversation, you know, mind-blowing in a lot of ways, but it's mind-blowing to me in that I see this as literally, this is the first conversation. Your film was that first conversation. Us getting together and doing this is the beginning of what I am sure will be a much longer conversation and a much longer relationship. And I'm so glad.
I'm excited.
I got to give Johnny a shout out again for the opportunity that he gave me when he brought us together.
Because
we're gonna keep this going. I see, and again, we talked about it, you know, in that very first meeting that about that idea of a legacy and leaving something behind and leaving opportunities behind for the next generation to see and then they pick up and be able to pursue on their own. And I totally believe that between the two of us, we will be having this ongoing legacy conversation that, like I said, if we do it on this podcast or we do it through your films and my interactions with your films, people will be able to pick that up and hopefully be inspired to go out there and do their own things and try to get their stories out there as well. So, wow. Again, thank you very, very much for being a guest today. I'm already looking forward to the next conversation we're going to have.
Same. Likewise.
And I also want to make sure that I, as always, give a shout out to the listeners of this podcast, because without you, we're just talking in a vacuum. So thanks all the listeners.
Thank you to the listeners for this, for having me. And
Yeah. And you know what? If I know you've already had one screening of the film, if there is ever an opportunity where you're looking to screen it again, make sure you hit me up. Let me know. I want to share this with, you know, people on social media, people who listen to this podcast. And to be quite honest, I also want to make sure that I get the chance to see it with other people as well, because film,
yeah.
at mm-hmm. the end of the day, film for me is something that we should be sharing together in these spaces and then having conversations afterward. And I know you're interested in that too. So let's make sure that we do our best to guarantee that your film mm-hmm. has another opportunity like that so that we can both vibe on it with some other people.
Yeah, absolutely. And funny enough, you mentioned that I'm actually talking to guys at the Woodward about figuring out how to do some additional screenings and then looking up for funding so that we can kind of keep this thing going, because the mission at the end of the day of, especially even in the city that we live in and also in cities outside of it, it's just like, if we have conversation one, if we do the brave thing of having conversation one, we become vulnerable. We say, I may not know everything, but I want to understand my neighbor just a little bit more. And just, just a little bit of bravery and get to enjoy some great art. Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right. Well, on that note, I'm going to sign off until the next episode. Thank you very much, everybody. Enjoy.